helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. Most of us try to rewrite the rules from time to time. We claim that it's lawful to drive 5 to 10 miles an hour over the speed limit. We claim deductions on our taxes that we know are sketchy at best. And I encounter people almost every day who try to rewrite what the Constitution says in order to get their way. But what happens when those we hire to represent us, who take an oath to support the Constitution, try to get around those rules? See, there are plenty of examples of those in government rewriting the rules, and only a few of those trying to stop them. They've become so common, some people are starting to call these attempts a war. Wars on freedom of speech, religion, and even the Constitution itself. In this battle for who creates the rules and who follows them, which side will win? Will the United States continue to be the experiment in self-government that George Washington called for, or are we devolving into the very subjects of aristocracy that our founding fathers fought against? Hello there, everyday Americans. Paul Engel here with the Constitution Study, and that is the question for today. See, as we're reading and studying the Constitution, we have to ask ourselves, are the people still in charge? Do we, the people, still ordain and establish the Constitution? Or are we now becoming the subjects of our own creation, the servants of those we hired to serve us? Now, one example of this, recent example, has to happen during the COVID-19 scamdemic. See, early in there, Nancy Pelosi, she was a Speaker of the House, the Democrats were in control of the House, they instituted what's called proxy voting. And now, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton has filed a lawsuit in federal court challenging a specific bill because he says they didn't have a quorum because this rule violates the Constitution. Now, I'm sure most Americans understand that when you're dealing with certain rules of order, there are standards. There are things we do. You know, you need to be recognized. There are rules for decorum. And yes, you need to have a quorum defined as a bench of justices or such number of officers or members as is competent by law or constitution to transact business. So you have to have a minimum number of each house of the legislature in order for that house to conduct business. Now, Mr. Paxton's lawsuit claims that the House of Representatives violated the Constitution on December 23, 2022, when they voted on the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2023 without a quorum present. Reading from the complaint, on December 23, 2022, only 201 members of the House of Representatives were present in the House's chamber, and that was less than half of the members, or quorum, was not present. The House therefore enjoyed only two powers. It could adjourn from day to day and compel the attendance of absent members. It was constitutionally unauthorized to do anything else. The House nevertheless purported to accept the Senate's amendments to the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2023 on that day. It did so under a House rule that allowed absent members to vote by proxy. But the Constitution defines absent members as excluded from a quorum to do business, and therefore unauthorized to vote to enact legislation by proxy or otherwise. Though President Biden signed the Consolidated Appropriations Act, his signature was a nullity because the act never passed the House of Representatives. And he asked the court to declare that the Consolidated Appropriations Act has not been enacted and is not law. Now, this gets into something very interesting. An interesting constitutional question from my point of view. According to the complaint, there were insufficient numbers of people there, members of the House present, to constitute a quorum and therefore able to do business. Now, again, reading from the complaint, we find that the final tally on the vote, according to the clerk of the House, was 225 yay, 201 nay, and one present. But he claims there were an extra 226 votes cast by representatives who were absent and had appointed proxies. He said the vote of those physically present were 88 yay and 113 nay. Now, where does this all go? What's the big constitutional issue here? Well, Article 1, Section 5, Clause 1 of the Constitution says each house shall be the judge of the elections, returns, and qualifications of its own members, and a majority of each shall constitute a quorum to do business, but a smaller number may adjourn from day to day and may be authorized to compel the attendance of absent members in such manner and under such penalties as each house may provide. So, again, how did the leaders of the House of Representatives attempt to get around this problem, get around the Constitution? By the rules established by House Resolution 965 of the 116th Congress, which says any member whose vote is cast or whose presence is recorded by a designated proxy under this resolution shall be counted for the purposes of establishing a quorum under the rules of the House. So here we have the problem. Does a person have to be present to be counted for the quorum? Now, Mr. Paxton points out, the Quorum Clause's text, the structure of the Constitution, and the longstanding and until 3 years ago unbroken practice of Congress to conduct its business in person collectively reinforce that the Constitution forbids proxy voting. Only with a quorum may either house do business. In context, that necessitates physically present members. The power to compel the attendance of absent members would make little sense if the Constitution did not require physical attendance. Now, I kind of agree with that argument from Mr. Paxton, right? What is the purpose of being able to compel attendance if people didn't have to attend in order to do business? And what about Article 1, Section 4 that requires Congress to assemble at least once per year? That means coming together, to be in one place. There are also certain privileges to members that are limited to their presence. Specifically, members are privileged from arrest during their attendance at the session of their respective houses and going to, into, and returning from the same, which doesn't make a lot of sense if the members could stay home to do their business. Now, there are also some examples. I've seen this in many attorneys, including Mr. Paxton's complaints, that I refer to as padding. Right? He points out that Article 1, Section 5, Clause 3 requires the yeas and nays to be recorded of the members' presence when it comes to a question of having their discussions, their debates entered into the journal. Not exactly a general voting clause. He also uses examples like in the Senate, in order for an impeachment to happen or to be confirmed, there 2/3 of the members present can convict on an impeachment. He also talks about other examples where it's kind of near here. And to me, those don't make the argument. The strong argument is the definition of a quorum and the fact that attendance is required by members in many situations to do the work of the House. Now, there also seems to be a Supreme Court precedent for this. Again, reading from the complaint, the Supreme Court precedent supports this construction of the Quorum Clause. The court has held that to constitute a quorum necessary to do business, the Constitution requires the presence of a majority, and when that majority are present, the power of the House arises. This is in the case United States versus Baleen. And he goes on to say, and presence means that the member must actually and physically be present, according to Christoffel versus United States. So we have the Supreme Court in previous opinions said, yeah, when we're talking a quorum, they must be physically present. They must be physically here. But there's one other interesting point to this I want to consider, and that is, what is Texas actually asking for? See, in the complaint, we read, the legislation that Texas challenges passed the House without a quorum. It therefore violates the Quorum Clause. Texas is entitled to a declaration to that effect. Texas is entitled to both preliminary and permanent injunctions preventing the defendants from enforcing the act's unconstitutional requirements. Each of the factors governing the award of injunction relief favor Texas. So what they want is an injunction. But what's interesting is, and again, I've seen this before from Mr. Paxton. He makes this point that, among other things, right? He makes points that that the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2023 has many unconstitutional elements. But his first argument is that it never passed, but he's only asking for an injunction against the parts he thinks are unconstitutional. Now, I want you to think about this for a second. What does this mean? If the quorum clause has been violated, if the House did not have a quorum, they were not able to do business, they were not able to vote on the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2023, that means that act never passed the House. It never was law. But there's a much bigger issue to this. If the court finds that, yes, a quorum requires the physical presence of members, well then, what about all the other legislation that was passed via proxy votes? How many of those passed without a quorum present? And if there was no quorum present, they never passed the House. Therefore, they were never properly sent to the president for signature. They never legally existed. How many pieces of legislation were passed without a quorum by this understanding? So what do you think the court's going to do? Do you think they're going to give Texas their injunction? I think Mr. Paxton made his case regarding the quorum clause. I didn't spend a lot of time in the other stuff because to me, that's superfluous. If he made his case and the court agrees, do you really think the court is going to issue an injunction that will invalidate Lord knows how many pieces of federal legislation? My gut says no. My gut says the best we could hope for is that the court will find as narrowly as possible this case. They'll either say, well, no, this is a special situation, so we can ignore the Constitution because it was an emergency, which, by the way, is a violation of the Constitution and therefore a violation of their oath of office. Or they'll say, well, you know, you're right, this was not really constitutional, but we're going to limit our opinion to these specific areas because we don't want to have a run on all the courts with all of this legislation, right? Because if they say the House violated the quorum clause, every piece of legislation that was passed without a quorum physically present now legally doesn't exist, which means you have lawsuits ad nauseum going crazy out of this. And somehow, I don't really think the court is going to be prepared to go that far. Now, maybe I'm wrong. I've been surprised by this court in the past. Maybe I'm wrong, but I'm not holding my breath, at least not yet. But I did have to ask myself, if this case were in my hands, if I were one of the justices, how would I find? Knowing the impact that it would have, the chaos it would cause, I think I would still have to find for Texas based on the evidence I've seen so far. Remember, this case hasn't been heard by a court yet. The other side hasn't spoken. But based on what I've heard so far, I'd have to find for Texas. Because if I'm on a federal court, I took an oath to support the Constitution of the United States, and I must uphold the law, which also means allowing the people to suffer the consequences of their poor choice in representation. So all those people that would complain about the courts and the laws that got shot down miss the fact that the people of those districts that in San Francisco and others that put this rule in place or that participated in this farce, that's the consequence of the choices you've made. Now, that's kind of what got me thinking about, you know, government trying to come up with the rules on their own and, you know, how do we proceed from here? But you know what? There are plenty of other examples that I really think I need to get to. So as I went looking through my news feed and I started looking at the articles that were catching my attention, I'm seeing far too many examples where government actors are changing the rules in an attempt to enforce their will upon others. Where we're going from the self-government, the experiment in self-government that George Washington talked about in his first inaugural address. He said, "And since the preservation of the sacred fire of liberty and the destiny of the Republican model of government are justly considered as deeply, perhaps as finally staked on the experiment entrusted to the hands of the American people." The very idea that we can govern ourselves sits in our hands. And what do we do as we watch government actors trying to move us from self-government to aristocratic government? So I said, I've got a bunch of examples and I want to get to that, but I want to remind you of a couple things. First of all, I hope you'll head to the website, constitutionstudy.com. So you can find out all the things that we're doing here at the Constitution Study. And you can check out the new program we have called the Constitution Study Patriots. So I'm developing a set of tools for people to use as they build their own arguments, as they build their debates, as they are working to preserve freedom and liberty in this country, to protect their rights. Now, it's still coming up and running, and the entry point is the mini boot camp, and I'm trying to do one in Middle Tennessee. I'm trying to do one live, somewhere around Independence Day. I'm still looking for a venue. So if you're interested in the Constitution Study Patriots, or if you're interested in attending the live mini boot camp in Middle Tennessee, well, go to the website, constitutionstudy.com, and find the post and let me know. I need some numbers so I can help determine how I'm going to proceed with this. Now, I also hope you check out Healthy Cell. That's, again, I don't know about you, but I get to the end of the day sometimes and I'm beat. My mind is shot. And when I still need to get stuff done, I reach for Healthy Cell's Focus and Recall. It helps boost my short-term focus and my long-term brain power using nothing but Healthy Cell's vitamins that are designed to work at the cellular level. Now, as an America Out Loud listener, you can get 25% off your first order from Healthy Cell if you use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. All you have to do is go to HealthyCell.com, put your cart together. As you go to checkout, use that code OUTLOUD. It lets them know that you listen to America Out Loud, and as a thank you, you get 25% off your first order.
In 2008, people could spend an average of 12 seconds on a task without becoming distracted. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds. The digital age is narrowing our attention span. Trouble concentrating or recalling information is frustrating, embarrassing, and kills productivity. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created Focus and Recall to boost your brain power. And unlike other supplements that don't work, Focus and Recall is not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients to help you immediately sharpen focus, concentrate longer, and strengthen recall. These physician-formulated gels come in a small gel pack. Tear off the top, shoot it down. Thousands of 5-star reviews proves it works. Supercharge your brain and see the difference. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company launched the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. The Wellness Company's chief medical board designed every supplement and medical protocol with your health in mind. From groundbreaking supplements like the Spike Support Formula to unique care like Freedom from Big Pharma. Join a healthcare system that puts your health and well-being above the interest of Big Pharma's bottom line. It's the way healthcare should be, with a company that shares your values. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
We wouldn't go a day without washing our hands, brushing our teeth, and washing our nose. Well, wait, we wash our nose? Yes, the number one place where bacteria, viruses, and pollen enter the body is through the nose. So the average person breathes over 23,000 times a day. That's 23,000 opportunities for bacteria, viruses, and irritants to get into your nose and make you sick. For an extra layer of protection, wash your nose with Clear. That is Clear, X-L-E-A-R. Clear's drug-free nasal spray features xylitol, an ingredient proven to block adhesion of many nasty bacteria and viruses, and effectively clean, not just rinse like a saline, but wash your nose. Clear nasal spray quickly alleviates congestion, opens your airway, and ensures your body's natural defenses are strong. Read the research studies for yourself at clear.com. That's X-L-E-A-R.com. Protect yourself from the pathogens and junk you breathe. Pick up a bottle for you and your family today.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution study. This is where we read and study the Constitution and teach the rising generation to be free. Now, I'm talking today about government simply trying to rewrite the rules. You know, it's been interesting. Through my lifetime, I've seen different groups and different organizations, they try the legislative process. If that doesn't work, they try the bureaucratic process. If that doesn't work, they try the judicial process to change the rules, even though the people have said no. For example, Joseph Biden has been trying to push, and he's not the first, but he's been trying to push a climate change agenda on the American people. That seems to be his primary focus, is to save us from this climate change that, you look at it scientifically, doesn't really exist. But what's interesting is he tried his Green New Deal in the legislature. It failed. He did get through his Inflation Reduction Act, which is basically the Green New Deal with a different title on it. But he's really had a hard time getting some of this legislation through. So what does he do? Well, he uses his bureaucracy to get around the law. Understand, only Congress has the authority to make legislation. The all legislative power, all lawmaking power is vested in Congress. It is not in the executive. It is not in the judicial. It is only in Congress. So when Congress says no, the president doesn't have the legal authority to go around Congress and do it anyway. Doesn't mean they don't try. And it doesn't mean they don't get away with it frequently because, well, the American people either don't know or don't care. So what am I talking about? Well, the current Securities and Exchange Commission are trying to implement global warming regulations that want to force U.S. companies to implement audits, CO2 control procedures, even to report not only how much CO2 that they emit, but that the contractors they use emit. Now, it's bad enough that the federal government doesn't have the legal authority to regulate CO2. They can regulate interstate commerce, but they don't have the authority to regulate the air. But what we've seen is the attempts to implement this net zero policy, when they don't get it legislatively, they're going to try and implement it bureaucratically. In other words, if we can't do it legally, we're going to force you to do it. We're going to find a way to force you to do that. See, back March of last year, the SEC proposed rule changes that want U.S. companies to treat plant food. Carbon dioxide is plant food, as if it was a pollutant, and therefore they have to disclose how much they emit. But you see, the Securities and Exchange Commission, which is questionable constitutionally, it goes far beyond the constitutional boundaries, is now basically pretending, what, they're the EPA? We're saying if you don't want the federal government to fall on your head, you must follow this net zero policy. You must give us this information. Again, what's reasonable about the federal government knowing how much CO2 you put out? Now, if you believe in the global warming and the now climate change hysteria, you may think they do. But again, take a look at it. None of the models, none of the predictions, none of the science shows that we are in a dangerous, we're even headed for a dangerous situation. If we are, it is decades, if not centuries away. But does that mean that the SEC can suddenly start making up rules for corporations that have nothing to do with its purpose, that is regulating U.S. securities and how they are transferred? See, this is, again, we're going to go around the Constitution, we're going to go around the rules, and we're going to make it up for ourselves. Now, I'm sure some of you out there going, that dirty, rotten scoundrel, that Biden minister, the Democrats, they're all out to get us. Hold on to that for just a second. You see, a bipartisan set of senators wants to regulate when your children are allowed on social media. They want to determine what your children can and cannot see on social media. And I'm sure there are conservatives and there are Republicans out there going, yay, 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 we got to do this. Stop for a second. Who knows your child better than anyone else? Is it not you? Who should be deciding what information, when they're allowed access to social media? See, my daughter, we decided, my wife and I decided when she got a cell phone. My daughter didn't get a cell phone at 13. In fact, I don't think she got a cell phone. I think she might have been 15, 16, maybe 16. In other words, the point when we decided, you know, she is out and about, she's all on her own, it would be nice for her to be able to contact us. And we made that decision. But Paul, the kids all have cell phones. Well, if all the kids are jumping off a cliff, would you go too? I mean, I certainly heard that statement made to me often enough when I was a child. But I come back to this question. What does the federal government know about what is best for your child? I ask this again. Where does the federal government get the legal authority to regulate when children can use certain products? The answer is nowhere. Now again, interstate commerce, but they're not regulating the interstate commerce. They're regulating within a state who gets to use these products. Now, I haven't dug deep into the bill, but I have to tell you, right off the bat, I'm concerned. What happens if, you know, maybe you're this bill says if you're under the age of 13, you can't get you can't join a social media platform. And that it's up to the platform to make sure that you're at least 13 years of age, to confirm you're 13 years of age, or get a parent's consent. How are they supposed to do that? I hate to tell you, senators, but children lie. And what if your 13-year-old, well, isn't ready yet to deal with the cesspool that is social media? How do you stop it? This is a bipartisan, which means when it's bipartisan, grab your wallets, they're coming after you. They're coming after your rights, they're coming after your money. Now, if they said minors, if this legislation said, listen, until you are 18 years of age, until you are considered an adult, you need parental consent to access these platforms because you may be exposed to age inappropriate information is the term I'm looking for. I might look at that and say, yes, okay, if you're dealing with the right of a parent to control what access maybe. I'm still not so sure because I'm still not convinced that the federal government has a legal authority to do that. But we've gone so far beyond this. And again, where does the federal government, why do we believe they have the right answers? And why do we allow them to determine, well, when a parent's rights actually exist or not? For minor children, if they had said 18, we're saying we are protecting a parent's right to control the upbringing of their child until they are of age, maybe, sort of, kind of. I need to dig into it. But I'm sorry, this is just another example of we've got to do something. And it's of the American people saying, we will allow the federal government to violate the Constitution because, well, we happen to like the outcome. We want the federal government to tell us that our children under age 13 need our permission. That that the federal government decided that at age 13, all human beings are capable of dealing with the absolute filth and garbage that is social media. By the way, I'm not talking about filth and garbage, one, from what I see from the people who comment, but also the studies that are showing that these social media apps are actually damaging our children. That should be a question left up to parents. And again, here we had, and again, Republicans and Democrats. Here's another example. This one is actually not so much getting around, but it brings up the Equal Rights Amendment, which people have been trying to get around the Constitution for years. The Equal Rights Amendment, which, by the way, contrary to its title, isn't about equal rights. It's really about giving special rights to women, which is really hilarious nowadays when you think about the way women are being treated in society today. So back in 1972, the ERA came out, was a proposal for an amendment to the Constitution, and it was never ratified. Now, Congress, when they submitted this to the state, said, listen, you've got 7 years to do this. If you can't do it in 7 years, forget about it. Congress then illegally changed that to 10 years. Guess what, ladies and gentlemen? It is 50 years later, not enough states have ratified it. Now, here's Chuck Schumer going, well, we'll just try it again. Now, just because the Senate Majority Leader Schumer is going to bring this to the floor doesn't mean that suddenly we're going to have the Equal Rights Amendment as part of the Constitution. See, first, it has to pass with a two-thirds majority in the House. I'm sorry, in the Senate, right? Because that's senator. Then it goes to the House. And two-thirds of the House has to vote for it as well. And then after that, it goes to the states. Now, Congress gets to decide, will it be passed by the legislature or by conventions in those states? It needs to be passed by 38 states, either in the legislature or convention, whichever one Congress decides. In other words, this is still a long uphill battle. But this is persistence, right? If at first you don't succeed, try again. The question is, will the American people listen to the title and say, ooh, equal rights, we all like equal rights, and simply fall in behind it? Or will we actually look at what is in this amendment and decide, maybe this isn't as equal rights as people claim it is? So I'm looking forward, once the legislation is there, once I see the I can see the language, I will go more depth into the ERA. But at least the attempts to get around the Constitution and ratify an amendment that was dead 43 years ago, at least that, they figured out they can't do that, and they're moving forward. Now, the other fight that's on, the other war that's on, it's the war on criticizing government. We call it the war on free speech, but let's face it. The only speech that seems to be being criticized is the stuff that goes after government or government-approved groups and activities. Here's a perfect example. All right, Dr. Fauci. Now, he's making the rounds again. He was interviewed in the New York Times Magazine, and he was talking about the fact that he gets blamed for so many of the lockdowns and shutdowns and whatnot. He says it was for other people to make broader assessments, people whose positions included but aren't exclusively about public health. Those people have to make decisions about the balance between the potential negative consequences of something versus the benefits of something. But he kind of ignores something really, really important. I mean, this literally sounds like Han Solo going, it's not my fault. First of all, Mr. Fauci ignored science. There's documentary evidence that he suppressed information that didn't meet with his agenda. As the head of NIAID, as the president's chief man on COVID, what he said had weight. So he says, well, other people should have made broader assessments. When you are lying to them, whose fault is it? When you're telling those people to make broader assessments that masks work, they don't. In fact, the only, there was one, there's like one study that said, well, maybe there's a 10% chance that N95 masks were, if you wear them properly, if they're fitted properly. That wasn't science. But he wants to wash his hands of all this. How dare you criticize him? I mean, he did claim that he was the science, but that's the very definition. That's exactly what he's trying to walk away from. Are you the science? Are you the one deciding what is and isn't true? And if people challenge that, is that not just an attempt to stifle free speech and stifle criticism of a government actor? And again, not just masks. He promoted, he thought that we should lock down. Again, no evidence that lockdowns work for any respiratory virus, but he recommended it. And the other people said, all right, well, let's do it because this man, supposedly the science, is saying so. Same with the vaccines. There's video of him going around trying to get people to take this experimental shot. And he's making claims, again, not based on anything in science, that, well, they're going to extend the pandemic because, you know, they won't take the shot because it'll keep spread. Except there's evidence that the vaccine does not, the quote-unquote vaccine, does not stop the spread. It does not stop you from getting COVID. It does not stop you from spreading COVID. But yet he wants to take no responsibility. And he, well, he's been used to, that fact has been used to shut down people who disagree with Fauci. In fact, was it Meta, the company that owns Facebook, has already said, listen, if you disagree with the WHO, we're going to silence you because you cannot be allowed to speak. That's the censorship we've been talking about. I've got some more examples of this, but before I get there, I have to take another break. But I want to remind you that the Constitution Study is just one of several voices heard here on America Out Loud. So do like I do. Make it a daily stop for news and other information. But it's more important that we don't simply stop by, that we do our part, that we participate, we engage. How? Well, by taking the stories, the articles, the podcasts, the videos, taking all of this information and sharing it as far and as wide as we can. See, if you wish to secure the blessings of liberty, if you wish to help us as we are on this task, then the best way to start is by sharing this information. Then you can know that you helped to secure the blessings of liberty.
We are fighting the ultimate fight between good and evil. AmericaOutLoud.com replaces groupthink with innovative think. Well, it was Walt Whitman, the poet, who said, "Keep your face always toward the sunshine, and shadows will fall behind you." America Out Loud Talk Radio, liberty and justice for all.
Whether you're an independent, a Democrat, or a Republican, one thing remains true. Airborne viruses love us equally. You've all heard Malcolm and the great Dr. Peter McCullough talk about the advanced nasal solution, Cofix RX. Cofix is made in the USA and recommended by thousands of doctors and pharmacists nationwide. Did you know that doctors and nurses have been swabbing their noses with povidone iodine to protect from airborne threats like colds, flus, and pandemic-era strains for decades? Cofix RX took that idea and made a more complete nasal formula with lasting cleansing effects. Maybe you're traveling soon or going to an event. Are you concerned somebody nearby might be sick? Maybe the office or classroom stresses you out. Get yourself a bottle of Cofix RX nasal solution. Spray goodbye to colds and flus with a Cofix RX nasal solution cleanse. That's COFIXRX.com. Save 20% by using promo code OUTLOUD at COFIXRX.com.
For 40 years, alarmists have been warning of a climate catastrophe, yet none of their dire predictions have come true. Temperatures have not soared, sea level rise has not been unusual, and extreme weather events have not increased in either frequency or intensity. In short, there is no climate emergency. For 15 years, the International Climate Science Coalition has led the call for climate realism and a Made in America climate plan. a plan based on real science that responds to the real-world needs of Americans, supports economic growth, and strengthens our essential infrastructure. A plan that protects the environment and ensures that Americans can enjoy the blessings of clean air, clean land, and clean water for generations to come. It's time to put ideology and pseudoscience aside. It's time for a sensible climate plan. For more information or to donate, visit our website, icsc-climate.com.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution study. And yes, we read and study the Constitution. We're teaching the rising generation to be free. And part of that is by looking at how government tries to get around the rules and lie to us to get what they want. And then, of course, you have to have the lies to cover up the malfeasance of what they did before. I've talked a bit already, but let's take a look at Dr. Tim, I think it's Shima Bukuro. I'm sorry, I know I'm mispronouncing it, and that's not my intention, but he's lying. He keeps repeating the lie. See, he says in an advisory panel that he testified at, he said, no safety signals were detected for ischemic stroke for primary series or monovalent boosters for Pfizer or Moderna vaccines in U.S. and global monitoring. Right? This is what he told the CDC advisory panel. There's just one problem. See, Epoch Times has gotten their hands on some data. And according to some of the files that the CDC actually identified ischemic stroke as a safety signal for the original Pfizer and Moderna fake vaccines, and that as early as May 6, 2022, they had documents that showed how early that signal was detected. The CDC, again, a year ago, knew there was a problem. Oh no, there were no signals. You knew a year ago. The CDC acknowledged in official documents that any adverse effects following the COVID-19 shot that met the criteria constitute a safety signal. But now they're saying we saw no signals. Another anonymous CDC official told NBC that the agency hasn't found any suggestion of a link between COVID-19 vaccines and tinnitus or ringing in the ears, except according to the data, the CDC had identified tinnitus as a safety signal by looking at the data in the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, or VAERS. Now, a CDC spokesman, Bert Kelly, said, to date, we have no data to support tinnitus and its link to COVID-19 infection or vaccination. Yet, looking at the VAERS system, there have been over 24,000 reports of tinnitus submitted after COVID-19 shots. Now, with that in mind, think of all the censorship of people challenging the safety of the COVID-19, the Moderna and Pfizer shots. How many people have been shut down, have been booted? Has the government suppressed information? We have, from the Twitter files, examples of the quote-unquote public health officials trying to suppress information on Twitter that makes people vaccine hesitant. In other words, you tell people that there might be a danger there and believe it for some reason, they decide maybe I don't want to be involved in that. But you see, we live in an amazing time. We live in the information age where information is at your fingertips. And more information keeps coming out about all the data that the CDC ignored, all the tests they said they would perform that they did not, all the things that that they lied about. And now their response is, well, how do we suppress it? But it keeps coming out how they tried to get around the law. We just will pretend it never happened. Another example. Do you remember the American Federation of Teachers? Well, their president, Randy Weingarten, according to records shared with the New York Post, at least twice spoke by phone to the CDC director, Rochelle Walensky, in the week leading up to the announcement that they wanted to halt the opening of in-person classes. Isn't that interesting? In other words, was the decision to not reopen in-person classes, which, by the way, federal government had absolutely no authority to make. None. Zero. Nada. But you see, they did. But was it influenced not by public health concerns, not by medical issues, but by a teachers' union? In other words, were the American people making the rules, or was a teachers' union making the rules? And what have we? What are the consequences of such a revelation? So we have the suppression of information, the lying about information about concerns, adverse effects of these shots. We find out that in many cases, the people other than the medical professionals, the one we were told were making all these decisions, were actually influencing the decisions. And then we have this one. See, according to the Li Fang Substack, remember all those pushes for the vaccine mandates and vaccine passports and all that? Well, apparently that was silently being funded by Pfizer. Well, at least in part. See, in August 2021, the president of the Chicago Urban League, Karen Freeman Wilson, during an interview on TV, argued that mandates would not disproportionately harm Black communities. And she said, the health and safety factor here far outweighs the concerns about shutting people out or creating a barrier. And then we found out that earlier that year, the Chicago Urban League received $100,000 from Pfizer for a project to promote vaccine safety and effectiveness. Yeah, she was paid to advertise that. And now we're finding that Pfizer also gave grants to public health organizations, civil rights groups, consumer groups, medical groups, doctor groups. Is it all with the same agenda? To get people to use Pfizer's product? Ladies and gentlemen, isn't that advertising? And it makes me wonder how many doctors, how many medical groups, how many corporations push these shots on people because of the bad information they got from Fauci and others, because of the money they were getting from Pfizer, and oh, by the way, by the money they were getting from the federal government. Now, I've mentioned about how government's been trying to suppress this information. Well, there's more coming out. It's amazing. You all know that Donald Trump was indicted in New York by the Manhattan District Attorney, Alvin Bragg. Well, guess what? Now that they've indicted former President Trump, they want to restrict what information he can share. According to Assistant District Attorney Catherine McCaw, in a filing with the court, she said, defendant has a constitutional right to speak publicly about this case, and the people do not seek to infringe upon that right. That said, neither defendant nor defense counsel have a First Amendment right to speak publicly regarding materials they receive through discovery. Says who? Based on what? I'd like to remind this assistant attorney that she is a public servant. Everything she does, everything she creates in that job is owned by the public. And unless she can come up with a really good reason why someone's freedom of speech and freedom of the press should be suppressed, I'm sorry, this sounds more like we don't want other people to know maybe just how bad our case actually is. And here's another one. So it's been well over a month. In fact, it's what, March 27th, when the mass murder happened at the Covenant Presbyterian School in Nashville. Yet we still have not had access to or published information from that murderer's manifesto. We have now we have multiple people saying we need access to this data. Not just general people. We want to know what was driving this person, this murderer. But you have the Governor Lee calling a special session to enact what are effectively red flag laws. He didn't get it in the normal session. He got shot down. He wants to bring it back and try again. Well, guess what? Now the lawmakers are saying, well, fine. We need this information. If you think that these laws would have stopped something like this, we need that information of why she did this to see if that's actually true. And they need it before the special session. You're asking us to write laws that would infringe on people's rights, you better have a really good reason for it. It's not just them. The sheriff of Davidson County, where Nashville, the county that Nashville resides in, he wants to know what was in that manifesto. He thinks he needs to know what's going on in there. Now, why is this information being suppressed? Why is it being hidden? Why does the district attorney of Manhattan not want people to know what they have against former President Trump? Could it harm his case? Possibly. But you see, he has the burden of proof. The president doesn't. Why is the FBI not releasing the manifesto? Do they have a legitimate reason? So far, I have not heard even an attempt to come up with a legitimate reason why. But they're hiding this information from the people before the people and their representatives get to make laws that will impact the people. And that, to me, is where I think I want to close with this idea of who is ultimately in charge. Is it the people, or is it those who act on our behalf in government? Who is in charge? You know, the preamble to the Constitution starts out with "we the people" and ends with "do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America." We did it. The constitutions of most of our states say that all power is inherent in the people. Yet more and more the people seem to be managed, regulated, controlled by bureaucrats, by elected officials that think they know better than everybody else, by law enforcement and other entities. And I contend that every time we turn those decisions over to others, we turn over a little more of our freedom. When we allow bureaucrats to make rules in violation of the Constitution, we hand over our control of our government. When we allow bureaucrats to make decisions for us without any facts or data, without giving us the... I'm not saying make recommendations. There's a difference between a recommendation and a decision. A recommendation to wear masks. A recommendation to take a shot. A recommendation to not go out in public is one thing. Mandates, passports, rules, that's something else. And this obsession with classifying and hiding absolutely everything possible makes me wonder. Again, it's not proof of malfeasance, but it certainly doesn't smell very good. I don't, you know, the statement that says, well, if you have nothing to hide, why don't you blank? I don't agree with. I may have something to protect. But it certainly does raise some suspicions, doesn't it? Now, as an individual, whether I have something to hide or not, it's not important. I have rights. But when these entities are working for us, there are employees, I have a right to know. I have a right to know what government officials are doing. I have a right to tell them as collectively what they can and cannot do. And I have a right to punish them when they violate those rules. See, I understand that there are situations where there's a need for secrecy. That should be the exception, not the rule. You see, more and more, the American people have turned over the thought, the thinking process, the decision-making process to bureaucrats, to others. We don't want the responsibility. Let somebody else do it. Now, listen, we hire representatives. Every couple of years, there's an election, and we hire representatives. You know what we don't do? We don't hold them accountable for their actions. We don't ask them, prove to me that you've fulfilled your oath to support the Constitution. They turn around and say, well, you know, I did this program, and I paid, and I got this. No, where did you uphold the Constitution? Especially when it cost you something. Where did you fulfill your oath to support the Constitution when it meant impeaching a judge or a fellow representative or some other bad actor in government, because that's your job. That's what you're called upon to do in the Constitution. We simply Say, here, we like this person. They look good. They sound good. You go do all of this and kind of wash our hands of the responsibility. Like Pilate saying, his blood is not on our hand, is not on my hands. Ultimately, do we the people run this country or not? Is this experiment in self-government a failure or not? I'm not saying we have to turn into a democracy where everybody gets to vote on all legislation. No, no, no. That's chaos. But in order for a republic to work, the people who are the source of the power must hold those who they hire to represent them in the enacting of that power, in the use of that power. Well, they have to be held accountable. They have to be held accountable for what they say, for what they do in our name. That means things like transparency, openness. It means knowing what they're doing and then, again, holding them accountable. Do we simply, you know, wind them up and let them go? Or do we watch what they do? Because regardless of whether we oversee them or not, we are going to suffer the consequences. And we see the examples every day. The budget deficit, inflation, the spending in the war in Ukraine where nobody knows where the money's going, these rules and regulations that violate the Constitution, all of these come out of our inaction, our apathy. And if we're going to let people make up the rules as they go along, to violate the laws and the rules we've established, just so we don't have to deal with it, well then, the experiment in self-government has failed. And we truly have devolved into the aristocracy that we declared independence from almost 250 years ago. Think about that, ladies and gentlemen. Have the American people truly handed over, free of charge, all the freedoms and rights and liberties that our founding fathers fought and bled and died for? That so many Americans have fought and bled and died. Have we simply decided it's too hard, we can't be bothered? Now, when you think about that, hopefully you'll come back and join me, because I'm here every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard in the iHeartRadio Network. If you can't listen to the Constitution Study then, well, listen on podcast. You can find it in your favorite podcast app. But please subscribe to the show. Leave me a rating and review. Helps other people find the Constitution Study as well. Now, you can find all the links you need at the homepage at AmericaOutLoud.com. But please share them. Share them with friends, family, wherever you can. By sharing them, you help share the blessings of liberty with everyone.